Hybrid corn was developed the late 1920s, early 30s.
Okay.
And once hybrid corn come out, if you look back in history, that in itself revolutionized American agriculture, because up until that time they were raising 20, 30 bushel corn. And then once the hybrid corn was developed and came out, they doubled and tripled production in corn like overnight. And then also by doing that, as you look back, that's when you'll see, since they started making money then, the farms got larger, tractors started coming out then, fertilizer, not so much chemicals till about the 1950s, but they started making money and started being able to buy things, and then agriculture started booming because of that. And the reason I got started was here in Shelby County, Iowa, we had more mom-and-pop seed corn companies than any county in the United States. And I've documented 18 seed corn companies that started here in our county. Zero exist today because of all the consolidations and everything. But they were here from the late 1920s to just about 2012 was the last farmer or family-run company that went out of business. And Time Magazine in 1992 listed mankind's greatest achievements of the last 1,000 years. They did that right before the millennium. And they listed the invention of hybrid corn right next to the invention of the airplane and electricity. That's the significance of what hybrid corn has done for American agriculture. But yet, I live here on a five-generation century farm. Farmed all my life around it with my great-great-grandfathers, and I had no idea the invention of hybrid corn had that big an impact on agriculture. And so it all started my museum. I never intended to do any of this. And as you see here, my grandfather on my dad's side, that was his first tractor in Oliver 66. So of all the things you see in this museum, that's the very first thing that I restored. And it's all I was going to do. And then he also had a 1930, about eight, wire check Oliver corn planter. So I restored that with the intentions of taking it to the fairs and historical shows. And then one Christmas is 2002, my mom sent me up in the attic. And as I was coming down from getting something, I seen a couple, three cloth seed corn sacks from Shelby County that I wasn't aware of, and asked my folks if I could have them to display with my tractor and planter. And my dad was telling me he thought at one time Shelby County maybe had five or six seed corn companies. And so being the history person I am, all of these producers that had these companies have passed away, but a few of their widows are around yet. And I went to talk to them and seeing if anybody had ever did any history on the corn, seed corn production side of it, and they hadn't. So I got my book out and started writing some things down. And long story short, what I thought would be five or six seed corn companies, I ended up finding 18. And I documented them all, wrote a book about it, collected 36 different sacks from the 18 companies on what you see and displayed here. And then I started collecting sacks nationwide, and now I have over 1,200 sacks from different companies nationwide. There's just 400 in my museum because I don't have room. I got about 400 different seed corn signs, and I have a lot of the tools, the graders, the dryers, fanning mills, planters, really kind of what you name it that went along with that industry I have here in my museum. And quite a few I've bought from other collectors. I had three collectors who lived within 50 miles of radius of me who were been collecting from 40 to 50 years. And they, as I was looking for the sacks, I found out they had a lot of these implements stashed away, not restored. And I asked them if I could buy a few pieces, and they said, well, what do you plan to do with that? And I said, well, I'm going to collect them now. I'm 57 years old now, so I was in my early 50s at that time. And I told them I was going to just put it away, and then when I retire, spend my time restoring them. And they said, oh, no, don't do that, because they said that's what we were going to do. When you get to be that age, you'll run out of energy, and you won't get it done. So I started restoring things during my winter hours, and you can see it got a little out of control at some time. And everything you see in my museum except for one piece, there's a planter that's not restored under my balcony there, just to see people kind of what they look like. Otherwise, everything in here I've restored as close as I can to its original, what it looks like.
And when did you start collecting this stuff again?
2002, so it was just about, you know, less than 15 years. But because of those three guys allowing me to buy part of their collection, which a lot of times you'll find out with collectors, they don't like to sell anything. But once they seen I bought it, restored it, and put it on exhibit for the public to look at, that really fired them up. And then they were willing to start selling me really kind of anything I wanted. And then I've had a lot of things donated to me because people like that coming out here. Every other year I call, it's a hybrid corn pioneer expo, corn expo. And I'll have working exhibits and also collectors from around the nation here showing off their exhibits and have live exhibits. I get a lot of grade and high school kids out here doing things. And I also have a 3-century corn plot. It's about an acre, but I plant open pollinated corn of the 1800s, what was a number called Reed's Yellow Dent, which was real popular here in Iowa. I plant the first hybrid corn that was commercially sold in Iowa called US 13. I can still get that, a few seeds of that. And then I'll plant like some of the triple stack corn we plant today. And at the end of August when I have my show, I mean, even the governor commented how it's amazing how you look at these three different, decades of corn and how you can see how we've advanced our technology.
And how does that make you feel when folks come in here and they're like, wow, you know, this is how corn started and things like that?
Well, it makes me feel real good, but like I said, I give a lot of credit to the guys that were collecting before me because they make me look good. But the main reason I do this is I do not want the young farmers of today to forget all the hard work, because everything you see in this museum was done by hand and horses. And it was a lot of labor-intensive work, and I don't want to forget why we have it so good today.
And I guess talk to me about some of this equipment here. Like I'm interested in that wooden thing over there.
Well, the one thing here, it's the very first John Deere corn planter. It's 1882, and actually it was before John Deere. It was Charlie Deere and Mansour first designed and commercially built those planters. And then another one right behind you. It's one of the oldest pieces I have in my museum. It's an 1848 wooden portable corn sheller. It's called a cannon corn sheller, where you would scoop ear corn into the back, and it would shell it, grate it, get rid of the foreign material, and also by hand you could bag it, because this was been the era of the open pollinated corn before the 1930s. And back then they would keep the biggest ear when they were picking by hand. Then they would shell it or dry it, usually on dryers up in the attic. Then they would shell it and bag it, and that was their seed for the next year. And yeah, and one thing that amazed me, all my equipment that I restore or I take apart, this is patented in 1848, and at the bottom of it has a cast iron auger.
Wow.
That's in pieces, they're a foot long. They have an octagon shaft so you can make different lengths. But I never thought the auger came out till like the 1940s or 50s.
And so I guess tell me too kind of the history of why folks got into the hybrid corn business.
Well, they got into business, one, because the open pollinated corn had maxed out its yields. And another thing with open pollinated corn, they were planting populations of 10 to 12,000. And if you planted it 15,000 or greater, you'd have barren stalks. So it couldn't take high population. With the inbreeding of hybrid corn, that allowed us to increase population, plants per acre, which because of that, the ears weren't any bigger, but we had more of them. And so as you go today, we're planting 30, 35, 40, some are pushing the envelope, more than 40,000. If we were still at open pollinated corn today, when I plant my plot out here, by just adding fertilizer, I'll double the yield. I'll go from the 30s to the 70s, but I'm maxed out. Well, then the first hybrid corn that I planted in the 30s, I'll get yields about 110 to 120. Well, then the triple stack corn, I check plant all of these, okay? So it's all the same. And it's about, there's three seeds per hill every 40 inches because that's the way we planted from the 1870s to about the 1950s. And so I planted my whole plot the same. Well, then the triple stack corn of today, even though we planted it at 30 to 35,000, in my plot I'm at 10 or 12, I'm still getting yields 150 to 170. Can you imagine tripling that? With the population. So that's why it was such a big deal when hybrid corn came out. And a lot of these guys got involved with it. One, because they knew that was the technology where we were headed. And two, it was a lot of work. And I think the reason our county was so big in seed production is that because of the work, it took a lot of people and families. And we have a lot of big families in our county. And people are very progressive but competitive. And that allowed them to be very competitive with each other and grow, and kind of the rest is history.
And I guess right now it seems like this year's been the year of mergers with the Dow DuPont, the acquisition of ChemChina taking over Syngenta, and now Bayer and Monsanto. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, how do I say this? Most people, and especially in the ag or the farmers, don't like that. But we're not going to stop it. And it's a change of time. At one time, there was over 1,200 seed corn companies in the United States. Now there's under 50. And so it's a trend that's been going on really since the 1950s and 60s, because that was about the peak time of all these seed corn companies. Well, it costs so much money to compete. Just like farmers, you don't see many farmers farming just 80 or 160 acres, and that's all they do. To be profitable, you're going to need to be in that 500-600 minimally, up to thousands. And so it's really a trend you're seeing in all of agriculture, even with the implement dealers and everybody.
And that's what I was going to kind of touch on next. You know, you think of Ford and Chrysler, and it's almost like the same thing with the car industry.
Absolutely. It's the same thing. And so it's just, if you want to be a part of that plan of that game, you have to roll along with the punches too.
Do you think ultimately that there will be just either three guys left or four guys left?
I don't know. I don't know if we'll see that in our lifetime. You might, but I don't see that for a while. But it's hard for them to compete, especially with the technology and getting the patents and that. It does push that small guy out of business. And you know, if he's not getting the best, the farmer not intentionally is going to drive him out, because they're going to go where they can get the most productivity.
Is there anything else you'd like to add here today?
No, I really appreciate you coming out, because it's about educating people. And also, I here in Shelby County, we're working on trying to build a national corn empire discovery center, where my exhibits and we could focus on, there's over 4,000 things made of corn. A lot of people don't realize that. But we'd like to get one place where you can see where we've been and now where we're going, and we could have exhibits of these different 4,000 things made of corn. They could, every so many months, the exhibitors could come and exhibit their product, and we want to put an ag academy for young people so they can learn about agriculture and get jobs in agriculture. And so that's a goal we're working on here in the county.
And can you tell me a little bit about what you do?
For 38 years, I'm the water superintendent for the city of Harlan. I've also farmed my father's farm and the farm I live on. I got 320 acres here. It's a five-generation century farm. But 5 years ago, when I ran for county supervisor and won, I rented my farm out to a neighbor kid and got him started farming on a crop share basis. And we no-till. We've been no-tilling here on the farm for about 19 years. And so I'm trying to teach him some of the newer technologies, too, and helping people get started in agriculture.
Steve, thanks for your time.
Thank you.